This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
BFM 89.9, good morning. You're listening to The Morning Run. I'm Shazana Mokhtar in studio today with Philip C. and Wong Xiaoning. But first, I suppose we'll recap how markets ended trading on Friday.
Nespresso, bringing you the perfect blend of global market analysis and insights.
While we look at the US, the Dow and S&P 500 were both up 0.6%, Nasdaq was up 0.9%. Meanwhile, in Asia, Nikkei was flat, marginally down 0.1%, Hang Seng was up 0.1%, Shanghai Composite down 0.7%, Singapore Straits Times Index was actually up 0.4%, and our very own FBM KLCI was flat.
Champagne but, without bubbles.
Yeah, but the index currently is at 1516.
Yes.
Still maintaining above that 1500 points level.
Yeah, let's see how well we do and whether we end the year on this quite positive note.
All right. Well, joining us on the line now is Vishnu Varathan, Head of Economics and Strategy at Mizuho Bank, for some thoughts on what's moving markets and what to expect in the year ahead. Vishnu, good morning. Always good to have you. Now, recent U.S. economic data, such as new home sales and jobless claim numbers, indicate that the recovery in the States is in full swing. How long do you think this buoyancy will last before runaway inflation starts biting into consumer spending?
Good morning. It's good to be here. Thank you for the invitation. I think the momentum will probably remain in place at least until the first half of the year. And inflation will be, I think, a niggling problem, but not one that's going to knock the recovery off its footing. One reason for that is we do see oil and gas prices coming under control. And the other is household savings still offer a bit of buffer. So we don't expect the consumers to immediately take a jarring knockback. That being said, we've seen the initial signs that, you know, consumer confidence, when you look beneath the hood, it does show some signs of scaling back. So we're probably not going to see the same momentum being maintained through the first half, but the recovery should be fairly buoyant, beyond which I think the variant risks and the Fed's response to inflation, I think these two will determine the recovery path.
Do you think the Fed will change course if Omicron continues to persist?
Not in the first quarter. I think they remain committed to at least winding down QE within the first quarter. What is variable is the more hawkish tones, from the likes of Waller and Williams suggesting that you can start rate hikes as early as March, and that rate hikes should not, be a huge setback to the recovery. I think that avenue there gives that leaves us with some room for wiggling around. I think Jerome Powell will probably not want to be as hawkish, so when the rate hikes start would be the question, beyond which the pace of rate hikes would be determined by how many more iterations of the variant risk. I think the one important thing to note is that variant risks have to be disproportionately high before the Fed capitulates on its tightening bias.
Meanwhile, Vishnu, if we look at China, right? Even on Saturday, the People's Bank of China in a statement said that they will be more proactive when it comes to the use of monetary policy tools to support the real economy. What are they hinting at here? How weak is the Chinese economy really?
Well, I mean, we've noticed that since the middle of the year, the economy has decelerated sharply. So the first in, first out rebound that we saw in China in Q2 last year, that peaked out in Q1 this year, and it's decelerated quite sharply. Depending on whether you're looking at the demand or the supply side, you can be anywhere between 2 to 3 percentage points below trend levels. So those are worrying signs. Mm. And the property ripples may last for a bit longer. So the PBOC's point is that they would probably use targeted credit easing even as they try to stem too much leverage risks in the property sector.
So if we take a look at the Asia-Pacific region more broadly, I mean, APAC countries were slower to relax cross-border travel restrictions due to local virus outbreaks and slower vaccination rollouts. So with Omicron on the horizon and cases rising in this region, we saw Singapore report a huge number of cases. Are we going to see the same hit to travel and tourism that we did in the past year?
I think, and to use the same word, hit, I think you hit the nail on the head. Which is one of the things that we are grappling with, which, so the earlier assumptions and hopes for a much more even recovery to continue from tourism and travel reopening. That may have to be deferred to the late part of 2022, which means that whatever recovery that could continue is not only bumpy, but it will continue to be uneven. So, unfortunately, divergence may still be the theme for the year rather than a convergence to much higher growth. And a key aspect of that could be China's zero COVID policy, whereby we will probably not see Chinese tourists returning to the region in the near future. And that's going to hurt economies like Thailand and Philippines disproportionately, given their reliance on Chinese tourists.
But Vishnu, is it also fair to say that with each successive wave of COVID-19 infections, the impact to the economy gets less and less, and consumption actually remains relatively resilient even here in Asia?
And that's a very good point, which is why our thoughts was that COVID or any variant risk must be disproportionately high before the Fed capitulates. So yes, we've learned how to adapt. We can work around it. We've already been vaccinated to some extent, and it's a rising extent. So these are really silver linings and allow the recovery to continue, which is the base case. The risk though is that COVID brings with it inflationary pressures, which economies will have to deal with for a prolonged period during subpar growth. So COVID, along with the downside to growth, which may be mitigated, brings about up to fend off and defies policy risks and could create a lot more volatility and macro stability issues.
But Vishnu, maybe Omicron is not that big a problem compared to the floods, right? Do you think the floods here would have an economic impact on the likes of Malaysia and Philippines?
I mean, surely they will. I mean, we know the devastation caused livelihoods and displacement. Those are the biggest human impact. For the economic impact, it's somewhat perverse. I mean, you do see activity dying down, but then the rebuilding restoration efforts usually add to growth after several quarters. So the economic impact of that is somewhat more predictable. Even if the human effect, of course, is going to be far more devastating. But this is where I think Omicron or any variant risk differs, because it will still continue to increase uncertainty around vaccine efficacy and evasion.
All right, Vishnu, before we let you go, maybe a question on currencies. Now, the sell-off in the Turkish lira is a reminder that emerging markets compared to developed ones can sometimes be more vulnerable to a currency crisis. So how would you assess the resiliency of Southeast Asian currencies now compared to the Asian financial crisis in the 90s?
I mean, our starting point is that, Southeast Asian currencies are far more resilient this time around. Debt metrics look better compared to then. Currency mismatches are better hedged, even if not perfectly so, and FX reserves have been built up. But having said all of this, any volatility that comes about will not be insignificant, because post-COVID we are coming from a place of higher debt, a potential for debt servicing to rise very sharply, and so a confluence of a very strong dollar and any risk aversion will nevertheless impact. But this time around, we believe that it should be more resilient than the AFC and even the taper tantrums.
Vishnu, thanks very much for speaking to us this morning. That was Vishnu Varathan, Head of Economics and Strategy at Mizuho Bank, giving us his take on some of the trends moving markets and the resiliency of Southeast Asian currencies, which are better than the 90s financial crisis.
Yeah, I think I'm probably the only one in the room that was kind of working during the Asian financial crisis. And it was extremely, extremely painful, right? The ringgit went, I remember against the pound, it went from like 4 all the way to like 8 or 9 within a short space of time. And it was really shocking. But I mean, the point is, basically all Asian economies remember that lesson. All central banks are more mindful of it. They keep a higher level of reserves. And also corporates themselves don't borrow in foreign currency as much as they used to. They now tend to borrow in the currency, well, in their local currency. So that has helped the situation. But of course, the Turkish problem is unique to them. They have a president that likes to replace central bankers and has a rather unusual, I would say, economic policy. But the Turkish lira has somewhat recovered from the lows. It was trading at one point 16 to the US dollar. excuse me, this morning it is 11. So within a short space of time, it has actually appreciated 33%.
Yeah, I think that's because they did announce this deposit protection scheme, right, which was meant to kind of protect it from all these interest rate reductions that took place. So I think that helped.
Everyone thinks that if you just keep lowering interest rates, you would actually overcome inflation.
Yes, which is so counterproductive.
Yeah, but,
exactly.
Well, you know, who knows?
Yeah, so I think they announced it, and I think the Turkish lira really did see an appreciation in the past few weeks. But I think many people say this is a backdoor interest rate hike, essentially.
Nespresso starts your morning right together with the Morning Run, bringing you the perfect blend of global market insights with expert guests.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.